Okay.
All right. So, Peter McCormick, man, myth, legend.
Gosh, come on, man.
Thank you for joining me. It really is. It's a huge honor to have you. Yesterday I caught you in the cafe. You gave me some great advice on being a podcaster. And so I'm going to try to implement some of that. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to tell a couple stories and lead that into a question. Cool. And so one of the ones that I wanted to start with was the idea of being your own superhero, of taking responsibility for your life. So about 2 years ago, I moved up to Wenatchee, Washington, this little sports community kind of place, built a whole bunch of friends, and we decided to throw a house party. And I sent out invitations. All the invitation had on it was come at once if convenient, come all the same, Sherlock Holmes quote. And the other thing, it said, dress like your own superhero, dress like the hero of your own story. So we're all a character in a story. We're all constantly telling ourselves that. And the more we take control of that, I think the more we're able to be the superhero of that story instead of the NPC, you know, and even at worst, maybe even your own villain. So my question, because I didn't want to give you the introduction of this is what you've done and everything. In the story of your life, what character are you? Who is the superhero? What are his what are his strengths? What's his kryptonite? You don't have to tell me what his secret outfit is.
I think I've got a good answer for this, actually. So, just can it be myself? Like myself, right? At 15 years old, I was a little metalhead, long hair, skateboard, shorts, Metallica shirt, whatever, Megadeth shirt. And I used to go and meet my friends in the multi-story car park in Bedford. We used to go skateboarding every day. And it was obviously before mobile phones. And I think that was, if I had to pick a favorite kind of period of my life, I've really enjoyed my life. I could die tomorrow. I'd be very content. I've been very lucky. But that was, you know, the coming of age films from the 90s.
Yeah,
that was the Rat
Pack. Yeah, you grew up with those too.
So we would just, I would skateboard from my house to town, which is, a few miles. We'd just skateboard and be listening to an old Walkman, listen to Bon Jovi or something, and we'd meet in the car park. We'd skate all day, and that was a kind of transitional period because we used to skateboard in town, and we got banned from the town because we were kind of grinding the beautiful stonery, and so we campaigned together to get a skate park. And at that same time, I set up a fanzine because I was listening to rock music and metal, and I just wanted to be involved in the industry. So I started a fanzine, and so I would phone up the record companies and do interviews. So I interviewed Korn and Pantera and Slayer. It was cool. And so the reason I loved that period of my life was I was just excited by life. Yeah, and I just believed you could do anything you wanted. And I wanted to start a magazine. I wanted to interview Korn, and I did. And it's kind of funny because, you roll, 25 years later, there with Bukele, the president of El Salvador, in a Metallica shirt doing an interview. And people are like, you're so disrespectful. You should have. I've just went as me, and I've been the same person since I was like 14. Look at me now. I'm in a Deftones hoodie, right?
Yep.
I'm not. We just bump into
each other. Got the Alice in Chains tat on.
I still dress like I'm 14 most days. I've just got a metal shirt and jeans on or shorts, and there's, I think there's periods in life where you try and force what you want, and then there's periods in life where you go with the flow. And both can lead to the same outcome. You can force what you want, or you can get it from the flow. But when you go, I've always found that when you go with the flow, you ride out the good and bad times a lot better. If you try and force an outcome, when things don't go your way, it's more stressful. You kind of beat yourself up. It's just not a good way to be. But when you go with the flow, if you're very stoic and accept what life will give, I think the outcomes can usually end up the same.
Yeah.
So the hero of my life is, if it's allowed to be me, it's me at 14. if the hero of my life is somebody else, then it's just my dad. I know it's a cliche, but my dad's so cool. He's just a hard worker. He's an engineer, aircraft engineer, and just made sure his kids have the best. So, do I have any famous heroes? No heroes. Sometimes I think people put who they admire as a hero. Like I love Sean Penn as an actor. He's not my hero.
Yes.
I'm trying to think modern day heroes. A hero has to be somebody who's done something incredible for the world. That's a tough one. You get to our age and more of the cooler people are younger than you, and you don't want someone younger than you to be your hero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's certainly shameful to look at a 22-year-old and go, I wish I could be like that.
Hero of my life. I mean, I love Metallica. James Hetfield, the hero of my life. Yep. I loved Alice in Chains. Lee Stadie's not my hero. Guy died a drugged up loser. I mean, like a great singer, but threw it all away. I don't know, man. Hero of my life. It's one of those ones you want to think about and make sure you get just right.
Mm-hmm.
My son, in some ways. That's
really cool.
I tell you why, because he's a better human than I am.
Okay.
He's more introverted. He doesn't need praise. He's very balanced. He makes me think I need to grow up sometimes because he's handled a lot in his life, you know, and he handles it really well. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have heroes. I just have people I really admire.
I think it's good not to have heroes. I don't know who it was, but when I was a very young kid, I got
never
to meet somebody. Yeah, I met somebody famous, and I remember just thinking, I walked away, and I go, that's just some guy.
Yeah.
Like, and that really helped for later on. It helps with talking to people, like, helps with talking to people that you look up to. Like, I can come talk to you as a guy and not as, like, oh, it's this guy on a pedestal. And I think people appreciate that when other people come up to them, too, because then they don't have the pressure of being somebody's hero. Like that's not fun too.
Yeah. Look, everybody is either the person who made a series of choices, which got them where they are, or somebody who was born with an ability, which they were able to exploit. So singing, the ability to sing and have a beautiful voice, is very hard to teach. It's really hard. Like if you're a football player, you could be an average football player and train hard and become good enough to make it. It's very hard as a singer. If you can't sing, you can't sing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you meet a singer who's very successful because of their voice, they were born with a talent. Now, they might have been a songwriter as well, and they worked at songwriting. Incredible. But most people just made a series of decisions. I woke up one day and said I wanted to start a podcast. And so I did. And I just worked hard and did some cool interviews. I could have made other decisions and I would be – you know, managing a store, or I could have made other decisions and I would be a member of parliament. Like, just a series of decisions happen that you make, maybe your parents make, and you end up somewhere. But people are just people. Yeah. Every single person goes to bed at the end of the day and they're just a person. Happy, sad, emotional, about all the same shit.
Yeah. So starting the podcast.
Yes.
You gave me a little background on that yesterday.
Yeah, yep.
And you were, you know, to summarize kind of what you said, basically you were on a downward trajectory, kind of hit rock bottom, found exercise through running,
mm-hmm.
found Rich Roll through running.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had this someone who was successful doing the thing that you wanted to do, which was being a podcaster, who was modeling that behavior for you. And you reached out and you got some assistance or you got some advice on how to start.
Yep.
And you just took off from then. So I found Rich Roll the same way.
Okay.
I started running. The first time I went out, I made it half a mile and I sat down and I contemplated my life decisions. And I did, because I grew up, I was a good athlete, and then I had let myself go, and it was just, I was very ashamed of myself. And I was like, you know what? It's not that bad. Maybe next time we'll make it a mile. And I
and
did.
You do.
And you keep progressing. And but then I was training. I was like, well, you know, train for something. So they had a 5-kilometer race. I was going to join that. I was going to do that. That was going to be my first time ever. And I wanted to get faster. And so I read Rich's book, and the thing that I took away from it, there's this part in it where he talks about he got a running coach because he could not seem to get his times.
Chris Hoff?
Is that okay? That's the guy's name who?
Yeah, he coached me for one point. A small part.
Okay, so you probably got this.
Run slow to run fast.
Run slow to run fast.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the first time I tried this, run only as fast as you can while you can still breathe through your nose. And it was pathetically slow. But I set out trying to run 2 miles, and I just fell into it, and I ended up going 12 and a half miles, and my times were going down.
Yep.
And I was like, this is unbelievable. This is fancy. So when I coach people now, that's what I try to coach them is like, look, you don't want to learn how to do this thing fast. You want to learn how to do this thing well, and then practice so that you get faster.
Yeah. I think it's one run in every four should be fast. And so the other three runs, you've got to keep you wear a heart rate monitor, your BPM below 140,
yep.
Because it's to do with the different zones you're in.
Yep.
Because you can essentially run the 140, you know, as forever. But the problem with that is like to keep it under 140 when you first do it, you're almost walking. You look like a fucking idiot.
It was.
You look like an idiot.
Yeah.
But you build up. Unfortunately, I put my back out and had back surgery, so I haven't run for years. But I should show you a picture. I was a lot thinner. I got my 5K down to 23.5, and my 10K down, I think, was to 49 minutes. I broke 50.
Yeah.
I was doing half marathons. I was running every day. Unfortunately, my knee's gone now. I have an arthritic shoulder and I had back surgery. But I put my back out running.
Uh-huh.
And I just haven't been able to run since.
From running?
Put
your back out?
Yeah. So I don't know what it was, but I herniated a disc. I mean, maybe it's not from the running, but
right.
The first time it went really badly was running. The second time was picking a bottle off the floor. And eventually I had back surgery with herniated disc and haven't been able to run since, which is sad. So I have
What are you doing now for workouts? Because you're in the gym.
Well, I'm in the gym because I'm here. I've probably had about a 4 to 5 month period where I've done nothing because I've been so busy with various bits of work. I basically stacked too much work.
Yeah.
But I've just got back into the gym. If I'm active, I am weights 3 times a week. I do a hard 25-minute session, mm-hmm. maybe 30-minute session, yeah. And I'll cycle a couple of times a week.
You doing body weights or weights?
I bench.
Yep.
But that's difficult because I've got my arthritic mm-hmm. shoulder, but I can still do it. Doctor says still do it. I squat, and it's just I do the weights I like.
Yeah, gotcha. So my question with that is, like, that was my takeaway, was the slow as fast type of thing. What, and it could be from Rich, or it could be from Chris, or it could be from whoever, but what's something from, I mean, you started this eight years ago, more than eight, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you started this journey that long ago. So what's something from back then that's a lesson or a piece of advice that you're still drawing from? Because a lot of times those things, you know, like the thing that got you here isn't the thing that gets you to the next level.
Yeah.
But I think there are like certain things that you can take all the way to the top.
Yeah. I mean, look, Rich gave me loads of advice. One of them was be patient and don't give up, because a lot of people give up early. I think because he's a podcaster, a lot of people came to him and said, I want to start a podcast. And he said to me, I'm the only one who stuck with it. To the point where I think he actually respects what I do. He might not like my content, but he respects what I do. Also was just authenticity is key. So don't try and be authentic, because you can't try to be authentic, just be you.
Yeah.
And so open yourself up, be who you are, let people know who you are, and either they like you or they won't. And look, I think being a podcast actually suits me, because, you know, if you came to my hometown of Bedford, you'll see as I'm in my coffee shop or walk around the town, I talk to everyone. I'm just a talker. I like talking to people. So it suits me to have a job where I talk, and everyone should just find the thing that suits them. I think 1,000 people can start a podcast and maybe only 2 make a living out of it, just for whatever number of reasons. Some is luck, some is timing, some is who you are. But I think if you want to be a podcaster, just always be you, just be authentic to yourself. And that's what I did. So I would, you know, I would just say what I'm thinking on the podcast. And sometimes I'd say stupid shit, but it was what I was thinking. And, yeah, with some people, it annoyed them and they were like, fuck Pete and don't listen to a show. And other people enjoyed it. And so from that, you know, I managed to build this podcast. And it's the same with what I'm doing now, because I flipped it now. It's not a Bitcoin show anymore. It's just a general show. And I'm still just being me, just being very open and honest about what I'm thinking, the questions I have. And I still draw from that. And there are don't get me wrong, there are times where your feet lift off the ground. And I'm just like a guy who made a Bitcoin podcast. Nothing. Yeah, I've never scored a goal at Wembley or played on stage at Wembley. Nothing crazy. But still with that, sometimes your feet lift off the ground. You know, you interview a president. You're like, wow. You're at a conference and loads of people come up and they'll talk to you. And you're like, oh, this means something to them. And just, you know, if you want to be your authentic self, you've got to stay grounded and just, you know, give everybody time. And if somebody has a question, take the time to answer them and help them. And just, yeah, I still draw on that. Just be you. Just be you. Let people see you, warts and all. And if they don't like you, so be it. And if they like you, great. But just you cannot. It's like I said earlier, you can't force these things.
Yeah.
You can't force a podcast to be successful. It either is or it isn't.
Yeah. I used to front a band, and
I see your guitar out there.
Yeah. And one of the things, I started out, I was a singer-songwriter playing acoustic shows, played 500-600 acoustic shows. And then I started a band, and that's a totally different vibe, right? You get everything, you get the stage lights and you get the smoke and you get everything going. And then it kind of becomes less about being a singer-songwriter and more about selling beer and just, you know, and like, oh, we're here to party. It's not like, you know, when you get one man, one guitar, you're up there like Dylan, you're like, I'm going to be a philosopher and here's what I'm going to tell you, you know? And we did it for 7 years and it was really good. And it was starting to build. We were really starting to move right when COVID hit. And I got this chance to, like, everything shut down. Gym shut down, work shut down, band shut down, canceled all the gigs. I went and lived on a sailboat. I went and lived in the mountains, just hiked every day, shut my phone off, quit doing stuff. And I came to realize that I didn't like the kind of person I had become when I was on stage, because I was playing to that idea of selling beer and whatever. And moving, that's when I read like Kevin Kelly's 1,000 True Fans article. And, you know, it's like, hey, if you have, like, understand the math. If you have 1,000.
That's the Patreon guy.
Yeah. Well, he's not the guy who created Patreon, but he's like, he's a huge fan of that model. The Patreon guy is.
Because the guy from Patreon.
Patreon guy's a musician who got big on YouTube. And when YouTube changed the algorithm from chronological to algorithmic, or they changed the timeline from chronological to algorithmic, it destroyed the subscriber base, because then it started to encourage this, like, short-term, you know, high shock value type content, as opposed to,
it's
like,
rubbish.
Yeah, but everything's gone to shit since
then. He's done a presentation called 1,000 True Fans.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he talked about 1,000 True Fans. That's where I heard it from.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So Kevin Kelly, the founder of Wired Magazine, like super old, you know, tech OG, and just the most thoughtful, lives like an Amish guy now. But he goes, like, you know, do the math, you know. 1,000 True Fans, if they contribute $100, that's $100,000. It's good living, right? Good enough to get you moving in the right direction. And so that's when I decided I was going to kind of move more in the direction of this kind of singer-songwriter thing, go back to being that authentic, because that's the kind of, if you're going to have audience capture, it'd be nice to have an audience captured by who you actually are, right? Just be 100% your authentic self. So I think that's really, it's really insightful. And I think that one of the things that's cool about the podcast you're doing is that you ask questions when you don't understand something.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, whatever you just said,
I don't get it.
Stop, spell it out, say it backwards or upside down, because I don't understand. Secret.
So sometimes I do ask questions I know the answer to as well, but sometimes I think, oh, does the audience not know the answer to that? Please explain that.
And, yeah,
but also that is also my cover for when I'm being a dumbass and I don't know. I'm just thinking of the audience.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about was, so that birthday party I told you about, mm-hmm. I go to make this invitation. I was going to use ChatGPT, and I'd gone down there. I joined this yoga studio. course, it's a yoga studio, so it's me and like 28 hot girls. And that was a great way to introduce yourself to a town. So all of my friends were, I had my buddy, who's now my podcast host, and then like 28 really hot girls. And we were like, we're going to throw this party. And I told ChatGPT, I said, make an image of fit and beautiful, diverse people of all like 20 to 40. And it comes back. It's like, I can't do that. That violates my restrictions. Like if I say something's beautiful, that means that somebody might get their feelings hurt. It's like, okay, rewrite my prompt in a way that doesn't violate your stupid restrictions. So rewrite it. I put it on. It's like, nope, sorry. Still can't do it. Just finally gave up. Like said, screw this. So you recently tweeted you reposted something that ChatGPT, there was news about ChatGPT trying to clone itself onto external servers, which is concerning enough, but even more concerning is that when it got caught and it got confronted, it tried to lie its way out of it.
Yeah, although it turns out that it was a simulation they were running.
Okay.
Yeah, I got community noted on that.
Oh, she got nailed. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. Assume this is true or assume a scenario like
this. They're running the scenario for a reason.
Yes, to see what the response is. Yeah. So and your comment was, we're cooked. Like, you know, so it's kind of a two-part question. One is that I look at a model like that, ChatGPT, where it like it won't let me put beautiful people in a picture because that would hurt ugly people's feelings. And also, hey, it may try and go out and do some wild stuff. I look at that as like a very unuseful tool, like as though it was a pocket knife, but every fifth time you tried to cut something, it lectured you about diversity instead of cutting it. Right. Mm. And I look around and I'm like, tools generally don't get popular if they don't do the job every time. Mm. And so I wonder, A, do you think that we'll see models converge to more truth seeking because of the not usefulness of having a bias?
Mm-hmm.
And B, being the character in this story, this is your story now. So what would the evidence need to be to convince you otherwise? Or like, how are you checking yourself, I guess, against kind of the AI doomer thing?
Yeah. Have you seen Grok in the last 24 hours? They've made some change.
And he's used it this morning.
Yeah, it's gone savage.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's been on Twitter. It's been answering things in a really savage way. Can I answer a different question?
You can answer the question.
Because I think AI is interesting, and I think about it a lot, but mm-hmm. I'm thinking about something different with AI. Okay, so I read a thing recently which said AI is making us dumber. They've run a study, and because we're using AI to do the research, come up with the answers, we're not doing the reading, not formulating the answers, we're not using our brain, we're not remembering things. So we've outsourced our thinking and productivity and output to AI, so we're making ourselves dumber. I was like, yeah, okay, that's probably true. Mm-hmm. If I'm not reading a book, I'm not going to remember it, okay? And then I saw another tweet somebody put out where a company had 1,000 customer service agents and they were using them to train the AI to do customer service and then let the 1,000 people go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes. So at the moment, every one of us using AI is making AI stronger.
Yes.
Whilst making ourselves weaker.
Yes.
But the problem is the incentive models means if you don't use AI in this market at the moment, you're less competitive.
Yeah.
So the company using AI agents for customer service versus using people are going to be more profitable, and therefore it might be terminal for those not using it. So AI is inevitable. Mm-hmm. The AI growth and evolution of the models is accelerating. And so I'm spending a lot of time thinking about what does that mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, what does it mean in the next year? What does it mean in the next 5 years? What does it mean in the next 50 years? 50 years doesn't really matter for me. I mean, if I'm, for some reason, I mean, what would that make me? 96, I'm probably dead.
You'll be around.
I'll probably
You'll be around.
But, you know, there is near-term acceptance that the world is going to change. There is midterm, and I say mid being 5 years, where the significant change has happened, and then there's long term where it's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Right. So near term, it's like, how do you plan for a world that you don't know what it's going to look like, but you know it's going to be different?
Yeah.
And I feel very sorry for the people who are at university now. By the time they finish their degree, their job won't exist. And I don't know what resort, I don't know what skills the world is going to want in 5 years. If you're a musician, you're fine because you want to go and watch a band on stage.
I think people still want to do like those real life experiences, like comedy,
sports,
being a musician, sports. Yep.
If you're a tour guide, I don't want a tour guide to be a robot. I didn't want to play chess against the robot. You know, I want the human experience.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of jobs will be in the human experience.
Yep.
And that's cool. But are enough people going to be able to earn enough money? Or are we just going to have a shift? Are we going to have this like hugely, like Ray Dalio says, we're going to go through a hugely deflationary period.
Yep.
Everything's going to break. The money's going to break. Interest rates going to break. Financial models are going to break. And how do we reorganize? Do we reorganize through war? Do we reorganize through anarchy? Do we just live in a more dangerous, crazy world? Again, I don't know the answers. But I'm trying to think about what that means. And then there's just the super long-term sci-fi crazy shit.
Yep.
In that, are we governed by robots? Are we governed by AI? Do we get to the point where Neuralink connects to AI and then suddenly you're in the film Limitless and you can know anything? Now, that one I don't like. If you can know anything and have all expertise, everyone can know everything. So where is the human experience? Because the human experience is in our differences. It's you from a farm in Kansas and me from a small town in Bedford who maybe like some similar music and connected because of Bitcoin, but from, you know, we can learn different things. Maybe you learn a bit about podcasting from me. Maybe I learn a little about training from you. And, you know, we get in some deep conversations. We get philosophical about things. We talk about things. And, you know, the world gets slightly better for us. How does that work in a world where you have a Neuralink, I have a Neuralink, we can know all and everything?
Yeah.
I think it's almost like, if it was a computer game, you've completed the game because there's nothing more you can do. And so where does the joy in life then come from? It's probably only hedonistic experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't think anything else where joy comes from because the joy is in progression in life. And progression changes. You know, starting a podcast, the joy is in getting the next big guest. It's Charlie Lee coming on, or Jameson Lopp, or getting the president, or you get 100,000 subscribers, and you get a sponsor, and it now pays for itself. It's the progression, right? And then life progression is I don't need to do that anymore. I can go back and create a football club. And all through that, you're kind of gaining knowledge and growing as a human. And, you know, I'm now looking down at 50. I'm 3 years away, and I'm reading a lot more. I'm choosing to work less, and that's progression. And trying to shape the world for my kids, that's progression. But in a world where everyone can know everything all the time, where is the progression? Will companies be the way, or will all companies be automated? When I want to come out to the here, I've got to look for my flights, I've got to look for my car, I've got to get it all booked. If I can just go to an AI, I want to be here at this time, it's all done. And I just turn up. It's a bit like the film Wall-E, right? There's no progression in the human experience because the human experience is you're given infinite progression at the point you want it. So I think about that. I think a lot of the sci-fi always comes true. I saw yesterday, like the Chinese have rolled out this like hamster police robot thing. And I just saw immediately, my son showed me, I was like, RoboCop. And I can see a world of Terminator. I can see, but I don't see it just like Terminator, like robots we got. But I do see a backlash against AI, which will be a backlash against government. If we see, I mean, certain industries we're seeing already, the creative industry is under strain. If you were a copywriter, you've lost work to AI.
Yep.
Because I can go on to AI and I can say, write me a manifesto for Bedford in the voice of George Washington. It's good.
Yep.
I can say, write me an advertising copy for my new whiskey brand. Sound a bit like Jack Daniels, but British. Bosh, here it is. So copywriters are done. Designers are done because you can now just go to Midjourney and say, design me a concept. The concepts, all the front covers for our Royal Bedford magazines are all from Midjourney. I don't need a designer. But more, I can vibe code the website.
Yep.
I can vibe code the app. If you're at university now, in your first or second year and you're learning computer programming, every professor has a moral duty to go and say, this course is now pointless.
Yeah.
Computer coding isn't about learning the code. You don't need to know anymore. It's about using the prompts and the tools to do it. So I think about all these jobs that are going to go, and whilst we're going to have more productivity through AI, it's going to be concentrated wealth into the investors and the owners and the creators of the AI companies. What does that mean? Are we going to see massive amounts of unemployment? If we do, we will naturally see people. We'll see civil disobedience. We'll see protests. I mean, Hollywood is no doubt going to have a writer's strike to protect extras and people's jobs, and that will do a limited job because filmmaking will just go to territories which don't have that. Will we see big boycotts of AI? Will we see? I mean, it's just we've gone through. There's a really great book called Engines That Move Markets, and it talks about the invention of the railroad and what that meant for transportation, and the invention of the telephone, what that meant for communications, and the invention of the, I think it was the light bulb, and what that meant for, you know, for life, that at night you could have life. And I think about the additional chapters that would go in that. Bitcoin would be one. AI would be one. I wonder what comes after AI. You know, is AI the final revolution? Is it the era, or do we have the space revolution? Do we have the quantum revolution?
Biomedical, probably. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, space.
But AI, all of those are kind of, all of these are upstream. I kind of think they're kind of downstream from AI, because I don't know if humans go into space. I think it might be robots. But the AI is happening so fast that we haven't got time to adjust. You know, with a railroad, you had to build a railroad. It might take, I don't know, a year to connect two towns. And suddenly those towns, their market would adjust, because you could take product from one to the other and it would be growth. It would, like, be new opportunity. And I don't know what it took it probably took decades for us to have a mass amount of railroads, and we could adjust. Same with telephony. You know, how many years did it take for the whole nation to be connected? But this is going to happen so quick, and the productivity gains won't be spread, you know, won't be spread evenly, or won't be spread well. It'll be highly concentrated. And so I just think a lot about what this all means and what's going to happen. And there's doom scenarios, and there's there's optimistic scenarios. But I'm consuming everything I can all the time to make sure I can at least be prepared for it, both for myself and my children. But there are doom scenarios we need to talk about. Not just the AI killing us, the complete and utter fracturing of society. It's a long answer.
Yeah.
What do you think?
The fourth turning thing, you know, the rise of populism. And I think,
but I think, by the way, the fourth turning was happening anyway with AI,
right?
Or without AI.
It's just, it's fuel to the fire, right? It's a turbocharger.
What do you think?
So I think a couple different things. So I think that the new technology that we have is going to allow us to no longer have to rely on other places for things. So I think that one of the most under talked about things about Bitcoin is the ability to load level on energy grids, where, you know, what's happening right now is that you have ability for peak capacity, and when you're not using it, you're at base load. And there's a lot of times a lot of wasted energy that just gets spent throughout the system and flushed because you don't have the demand for it, but you have to have the ability to go to peak demand. And being able to take that excess stranded or wasted energy and turn it into a valuable capital resource, that allows you to build a grid towards maximum capacity and greater. Okay. So then if you do that, you've got a Bitcoin treasury that's given you some wealth. You're able to build out local infrastructure instead of relying on global stuff. Like in the States, the average food product travels like 1600 miles to get to somebody. And it doesn't have to be like
that.
Yeah. Like it doesn't have to be like that, but everything's produced in the middle and sent to the coast, and all the fruit's produced on the coast and sent to the middle. I grew up in Kansas. That's exactly what it is. Everything leaves. All of our food comes from, all of our stuff at the grocery store either comes from local meat, or it's potatoes from Idaho, oranges from Florida, you know, apples from Washington. So I think that you're going to see a resurgence of more local type production of not just food, but kind of the entire infrastructure being changed out so that it's more compact. And I actually think that that lowers the chance. We're still going to have these conflicts. We're still going to have these small scale skirmishes, and people just don't get along. But I think it lowers that because you're just more self-sufficient. Like, why do people go to war? Typically they go to war because they're out of resources, but they got a big stick and they want to go hit. They're like, hey, if we hit you with our stick, we can take your shit. But now if you don't have the need, I think that lowers it down. I teeter on it because I see the capabilities of AI as being far beyond and above anything that humans are capable, but for still haven't figured out where the soul comes from. And I don't know if you can put a soul in a machine. You talk to a guy with a hot rod and he says that there's a soul in that 67 Camaro.
Yeah.
You know, but is it true? So I don't know. I'm kind of like you where I can't see more than like 5 years out. And I think 5 years out is just everything is different.
Yeah. It's just because of the speed of change. Yeah. If you are using ChatGPT and Midjourney, you can't help but notice the change. And one of the big changes I saw recently in ChatGPT is, I mean, I use it all the time, where it went from just answering my prompts to taking context from all my previous prompts.
Yes.
Yeah, to feedback to this.
Yes.
And so there was a thing where I was talking about, how do I try and fix my town of Bedford? And he kind of came back and said, look, you're already doing this. You've got the football club. You've got this. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about these things. It was this whole new thing where it was like, oh, you get me now. You understand me. You understand what I'm trying to do. That was a big change.
Yeah.
That was a big change. And by the way, every time I try and get ChatGPT to do something new, it always performs. Like, I put in the sales for the first 2 months from my coffee shop as a spreadsheet. I said, just take a look at this. Tell me what you think. Came back with all these kind of this analysis of the data, what we're selling, our margins, you know, time of day. And then it said, do you want some recommendations? I'm like, yeah. It said, well, you need more people through the door. You know, your gross profit's fine. Like, do you want to come up with some ideas? I'm like, yeah, here's. And it just, I mean, this is great. This is, to me, this is good AI. This is you taking your current business and you make it more productive. It's coming up with ideas. It's solving things. I love this. This is great. But that's now.
Yeah.
And it's, what is it capable of in 5 years? And who do we not need because of that? What does it do to the legal profession? What does it do to marketing? It may be that we just decentralize the world more. It may be that rather than having lots of big companies, we don't need big companies. So maybe on infrastructure, on hotels, but we don't need big marketing companies anymore. And we'll have, you know, a million marketeers in the UK, all providing different services, you know, to the individual. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Even Ray Dalio said, I don't know.
Yeah,
I can just try and plan for outcomes. Yeah. It's really hard to know. But my concerns lie with the people I worry about most are probably someone's 40 years old. They've worked for 20 years in an industry. Mm-hmm. They're making 80 grand a year, 100 grand a year. They've got their house, like everything's good. And their entire industry is going to get wiped out.
And they're leveraged to the hilt.
They're leveraged to the hilt.
$600,000 mortgage and 2 car payments.
And they only know one thing, to do one thing.
Yep.
And you can retrain them. But what can you retrain to have 20 years of knowledge straight away?
It's going to be something that's lower, that's more like, go dig that ditch because we haven't gotten a robot to figure out how to do that yet.
Yep.
You can't go be a lawyer because that's gone. Right?
Maybe going to be a teacher. That's one thing. But you're not, you know, you're 80 to 100K. You might be a two salary household, both at risk. That's who I worry about most.
Yeah.
I worry less around the 50 roll, because I mean, I'm near 50 and it's like, oh, have I saved enough? I've probably saved enough. I can just, and this is not every 50 odd, I'm generalizing here, but like you can go, can I just kind of like edge towards retirement?
Yeah, limp across the finish line.
Yeah, limp across the finish line, and it will be what it will be.
Yep.
I might not have the best health care, but like I've had a good life. I worry less around the 30-year-old because they maybe don't even own a home. Maybe they still haven't found.
Haven't had a chance to get in debt.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, actually. That may be the saving grace for so many people, that they just are so priced out of this market that they can't participate.
The 20-year-old, like my son, don't worry about as much because he's got choices and options, still lives with dad and figure it out. But then I worry a little bit more about the 15-year-old, like my daughter, or the 14-year-old, who's tomorrow is going to have a careers session at the school. And the careers advisor is no way as deep down this rabbit hole as I am. They're not thinking about it as I am. They might be sat there with a computer answering questions and said, yeah, you should go and work into marketing. Here's a marketing degree. And it's just like, no, that's a terrible fucking idea because that job's not going to exist and it's 6 years away and blah, blah, blah. And so I think we've really got – I mean, the whole education system is going to have to change. And I don't think the education from 5 to like 10, 11, because – just get the basics. People, kids should know math, English. Despite having supercomputers, we still need our brains to know how to compute. You should still learn languages, even though you can have auto translation. You should train the brain. But from like 11, 12 to 18, that's prep for life. And I think, what are the skills that kids will need to be prepared for life? And it is critical thinking. It is diving deep in economic theory. It's diving deep into philosophy, into the arts, into those things that just train the brain to be a brain that can prompt, to be a brain that can create, to be a brain that can think. And that's why I think a lot about my daughter right now. It's we're not at that stage anywhere where you learn a skill. There's some exceptions. If you're going to be a doctor, and I don't believe we'll outsource all our medical guidance to AI, I think you will always want a doctor alongside that. But you're going to be a doctor, you need to go to university for 7 years and train. I get that. If you want to be an engineer, you want to go to university. It's a good thing, right? We still need math experts. You should go to university for that. But all these bullshit degrees, which are about specific careers, I think they're a waste of time now. But I just don't know the shape of the world. It's wild. It's weird. It's also makes me think that like we are in the simulation, because essentially the
housekeeping,
the universe is approximately 13.8 billion years old. The series of events that had to happen for you and I to be sat here are so infinitely wild and so infinitely, like the probability is so small, it shouldn't have happened. In that, I had to decide to come to Singapore network school when you were here.
Yes.
I had to have had created a podcast that you became aware of to know to come and say hello. Okay, there's that. But then you can go back to
to be in the gym when I was in the sauna.
Yes,
like, which was a weird time. Yeah.
But then you go back and you go, well, you had to make all the life choices that you made to get here and I did. But then your parents had to meet at that time and procreate at that time to create you. And then you go through all the parents that made that happen. Yeah. And then you go through the entire evolution of from this first life forms under the ocean. And like, we should not exist. Like, one thing along there means we doesn't exist. Yep. My conclusion to that has always been, well, we've always existed. Okay, and to also, we're not living in the 1700s or 1000 BC. We're living in 2025, and we're going to live through probably the arrival of the singularity, in that we will have quantum, AI, fusion, like every single technology advancement will happen in our time, and we will see what the singularity will bring. And for that, you know, I say 13.8 billion, I get to live at that moment? Yeah, fuck off. Come on. Why? Why do we get to live at that moment? So I believe we all get to live at that moment. because we are all the same and it's just a simulation. I'm fully in simulation theory.
The oneness.
Yeah, no, I just am. I just, the math checks out.
That makes a lot of sense. Do you know who Stephen C. Meyer is? Guy that wrote The God Hypothesis, and he's written a bunch of stuff about like there being a intelligent creator, and then basically he compares DNA to code and says, look, it's just computer code. It's just better than our code. It's just more elegant computer code than we have. And by the way, it kind of makes sense that if there was a God, that he would create us in his image, because look what we do.
Yeah.
We made robots and they look like us.
Also quantum. Quantum's weird.
Yes.
The quantum world is super. I mean, what if Einstein said it's spooky.
Spooky. Yeah.
What something at a distance.
Yes. Yes.
That there can be two connected particles at different lengths of the universe that are connected. That to me is a computer program.
Yep.
Quantum is a computer program.
Yep.
That something, when you observe it, changes. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like, you know, when you play Grand Theft Auto, the world is built for you as you go, but the entire world doesn't exist at the same time.
Like, yes.
We can see this world, but beyond those trees, it doesn't exist. Yep. But as you drive over those trees, it exists. That's essentially what quantum is. And so, does the world exist back home at the moment, or will it
does it exist on the other side of that door?
Yeah.
Right?
Like it might exist when I open it.
Yeah.
Now, actually, I do believe it all exists at the same time, because I can call my door. And maybe we aren't in simulation, but maybe we are.
But the math checks out.
The math checks out.
Yeah.
You know, the hypothesis that if you can create Fortnite, how many Fortnite worlds are spun up every day? Millions by kids all around the world, constantly, millions and millions and millions. So the thesis does play out. Computers advance 1,000 years from now. You could recreate this. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you create this? I always fuck my son with this one because he blows his mind. I was like, do you know the best thing about simulation theory? Yesterday might not have happened. It's like, well, no, it did. I was like, no, but it might not have. He's like, what do you mean it might not have? It did. I was there. I was like, you think you were there, but you might have woke up today, and today is the start of the simulation. Mm-hmm. And everything that you think happened is just programmed into you has happened. He's like, fuck off, Dad. I don't know, man. It's a lot of weird stuff to think about. I also think sometimes you can get drawn into thinking about these weird theses and fall for them. And actually, no, we are just in this random ball of mud spinning around a hot nuclear reactor.
I think both can be true.
Yeah.
I think I really do think both can be true. Like you can sit there and you can spin out thinking about all of that stuff. Like every corner I turn, there's a million Hollywood people just resetting the set. Yeah. And all of a sudden they disappear like the Truman Show. And, or it could just be that, you know, what I really need to do is just go down to the gym, do bench press, not worry about shit. And things are going to be better that way. You know, it throws you for, especially when you're like me. Like I grew up on this little farm. I thought I was just this tiny little person in this giant world, thought I would never matter, not be significant at all. And then to come and be like, you know, I think I'm just like everybody else. I'm pretty sure that we only differentiate ourselves off the choices that we make, which is basically like the moves that you play in the game. Mm. I don't know. So there's some good players out there.
Yeah, I don't know. The older I get, the more introverted I get, and the less I care.
Yep.
I just don't care. I just want to, because you don't. I don't know if I'll die in an hour, a day, a year, 10 years, 30 years, and I just don't want to let too much stuff stress me anymore. I've had stressful periods in my life. I just don't want to stress anymore. I just want to enjoy my time and try and leave every bit of the world that I touch a bit better than it was before. So if someone's getting stressed, just try and say it doesn't matter. Like my son, he can get really angry over the littlest things. I'm like, Connor, it doesn't matter. These things don't matter. But yeah, I'm just look where we are, man.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't get to do stuff like this. We're very fortunate. Yeah. By the way, did I say this to you? Have you watched The Last of Us?
No, but you're the fourth person in the last day to mention that.
I feel like I'm on the set of The Last of Us. It's wild.
I have this saying that nobody moves to an empty hotel on a fake island in a ghost city with a real billionaire trying to restart a restart society because they're on a consecutive streak of perfect decisions. Like, you do. You just got to look around and be like, I don't know how I ended up here, but it's not bad.
When we first got here, me and Connor were like, this is, because we turned up at night, we're like, this is weird. Why are we here? I think we fucked up.
I had the same thought when I came here.
Yeah. And now we're 3 days in. I'm like, one, I don't want to go, and two, I want to come back.
Yep.
And I just want to come and have a month here and just reset every part of me. I can't because I've got too much work to do, but I would like to. But it does feel like the set of The Last of Us. I could totally see zombies running around.
Yeah. The first thing I did when they asked me to run man camp was I tried to figure out how we could get paintball guns so we could have war games.
It would be so much fun.
I was like,
fun.
This would be perfect.
Yeah, it's 100 people a team across the island.
Yep. Just go after it. Let's see. Do you mind if I got you got
yeah,
a couple
okay.
more?
No, go for it.
What else do we have here? Oh, okay. So so wealth. You've built some. Like you have something to take care of. You have something to look after. One of the advertisements on your podcast is a Bitcoin inheritance company. When I met you, you talked about how you're bringing your son along on these trips now because you realize that due to his position of being your son, he's likely to come into some wealth and you want him to be prepared and armed for that world so that he does well with it. So when you think about Connor, what do you want for him in life? Where, like, if you were to, like, which you're looking at all these different scenarios and all these different trails, all these different routes, and you're like, I wish he'd go down that one. You're not going to push him or anything, but you're like, if he went that way, that would make me feel like he has the best chance of being very living a good life.
Yeah, whatever
that means.
No, so I don't think about it like that. I don't think about the route I want to push him down.
Yeah,
I think more about him seeing enough routes to find the one he wants to go down.
Yeah.
Look, he's fortunate in many ways because he's 21 years old, and this year he's been to New York and a board meeting with the Winklevoss. Now he's here in Malaysia seeing this project. He's fortunate to see those things. But at the same time, we're not the same person at all. He's not as intense as I am. He doesn't work as hard as I do. Although he's working harder these days, but he's just not, he's not dialed into the same things I am for the same reasons. And so you can't make your child become you. They either become similar because they want to, or they just find their own route. You know, some super successful, smart people have degenerate kids who become drug addicts. Some super degenerate parents who are drug addicts have kids who become super successful. Like, any scenario is possible. I just want him to see, I want him to see enough to be able to find what is right for him. And right now it's producing a podcast. What it will become in 5-10 years, we don't know, because again, the world is changing.
Yeah.
I think most of all, the thing, and the reason I take him everywhere with me is I want him to meet as many people as possible, experience as much as he can in life to shape an intelligent, empathetic, good human who's able to make good decisions. Because there'll come a time when I don't exist, and almost certainly it'll be before him, and same with his sister, and there will be an inheritance left. And, you know, I'm not a crazy wealthy Bitcoiner, but Connor might be one day because of the growth of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it's understanding the responsibility for that. We don't live a wild life. We have a nice house. We go on holiday twice a year. But we don't live a crazy life. Yeah, I'm in shorts and trainers and a Deftones hoodie, right? And we give a lot of money away locally. We probably give away £150,000-£200,000 a year. Not just our wealth, like we fund, so we've just done for the football club a £25,000 grant to local schools to buy football equipment. we've given £25,000 each to two different youth football clubs to buy kit and equipment. We have a fund we set up in Bedford where we've given away around 20, 25 grand a year to young kids who are exceptional at certain sports or want to set up a business. And so that's the most important thing. It's like, altruistic, behavior. And it's trying to help him understand that you can buy a Ferrari when I'm gone, or for the cost of that Ferrari, you can change 20 kids' lives by funding them £15,000 start a business or whatever. And so it's trying to help him understand the responsibility of an inheritance. Because that inheritance, I think the 40%, I might have these numbers wrong, but 40% of inheritance is gone in three generations.
Yeah.
And so it's how
do you... I would be surprised if it's not higher.
Yeah, it's how do you teach, how do you create something? Because they talk about Bitcoin as generational wealth. How do you teach something where every generation, you've got at least as much as last time or more, and so it can do more good?
Yeah, or more bad.
Or more bad, yeah. But like, how do I prepare Connor for that responsibility? And not only that, he knows how to prepare his child for that responsibility. And that child knows how to prepare that child. How do you have this legacy through the bloodline that creates more good in the world? Yeah. And so it sounds really wanky saying like that. But like, I know a lot of Bitcoiners think like that as well.
Yeah.
They talk about, when I hear about, say, people criticize wealth, people say, oh, they just hoard wealth. No. They do, but they do it for a reason. So that great wealth creates more wealth, so they can do good stuff with it. Like every rich person I know, and I know some people are really rich, do good stuff. They fund schools. They start businesses. They fund entrepreneurs. If you just take that away, suddenly they're going to do less of that. And so you have to trust rich people with money. You have to trust wealthy people with money. And yes, you'll get some degenerate wealthy people who just buy Ferraris and do cocaine and sleep with hookers, of course. But the majority of wealthy people I know are altruistic and do a lot of good stuff. And so you've got to trust them with that capital because they're way better at it than the government are. And so, yeah, it's just giving Connor the life experiences so he knows what to do. A little bit of selfishness with a little bit of altruism. Too much altruism, you won't have anything left. Too much selfishness, you won't do enough good. Like, what is the right balance? And so I think about that a lot. And my daughter, her journey on this will start in the next year to 3 years, and it will be the same. And I can sit in a rocking chair, listen to Alice in Chains, read a book, sip a whiskey, and
it taxing my days. Taxing rich people for their money is kind of like taxing fit people for their muscles in a lot of ways. Like,
yeah, that's what happened to me.
You got taxed.
I got taxed.
Yeah,
I got taxed
by the council got to you.
Yeah, look, I'm not anti-tax.
Oh.
I'm
not, you got to have some.
I'm just not an advocate. Look, I get the theoretical framework that anarcho-capitalists have, that you can't have the state without socialism, you can't have socialism without the state, and blah, blah. I get everything they're saying. I just think the state is a natural monopoly. Even here, if there was no government here, you would build government here.
Yep.
What would happen is you would need a hierarchy and rules and decision-making, and then you probably want a constitution to protect against some kind of corruption, and then you'd want a voting system. Whenever you want to get rid of government, it will rebuild itself with high densities of humans. It's just the way it is. You want safety, protection, rules, blah, blah, blah. Freedom for me is the ability to make decisions freely within a moral and legal framework. Okay? And so, for example, I think the US Constitution enshrines freedom. Mm-hmm. It gives freedom. It codifies freedom into the law. Yeah. Could be better, but it does. And so if you come to that acceptance, I come to the acceptance that there is a certain amount of tax needed to pay for certain things. What we've got in the UK is a butchered version of that. We have backdoor socialism. The state essentially owns the means of production because we're so highly regulated, highly taxed, and there's so much control over our speech. You essentially play ball to be able to earn. but the government might not own 51% or 50% of the company, but they own more than 50% of the productivity. Mm-hmm. So it's backdoor socialism. Whatever you people are, that's not real socialism. It's the same. The outcome is exactly the same. And like any government, typically they can't live within their means. They're spending more than they have, and so they talk about taxing more. And then we're talking about a wealth tax in the UK. We've had 16,500 millionaires leave the UK in the last year. How much more taxes are put on middle class people to cover that? They want to introduce a wealth tax, a 2% wealth tax. All the socialists are like, you greedy millionaires, blah, blah, blah. They demonize the wealth. And it's stupidity. You have to get over your emotion ideology and accept the world is uneven and you will have poverty and extreme wealth. The only way to get rid of that is make everyone the same, which is communism. We know that doesn't work. And so we just need to have a balancing system. Right now, the top 1% pay the 30% of the tax in the UK, top 10% pay 60%. They're paying their way. The richest are paying their way. Let's not laugh or curve them out of the country, and let's not demonize them. Let's celebrate them, and let's create real wealth by creating jobs. Can't remember the original question.
No,
went on a rant.
That's where we went. That's where we were going with it. I watched another one of your podcasts last night. I was falling asleep to it. You had a guy on there. He was a Iran-Israel subject matter expert.
Oh, Faraz Modad.
Yeah, I think that's it. And he was talking about the he was talking about the pizza what is it called? The pizza indicator the gay bar indicator.
Yeah. So around the Pentagon, when something's happening, pizza sales go up and revenue at gay strip bars goes down.
Goes down.
Yeah.
And I laughed.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
So hard. Yeah. I stopped it and I rewound it and I stopped it and I laughed so hard.
He's a genius.
What makes you laugh? What are the things that you find funny?
Oh God,
what gets you busting out?
I mean, well, there's many types of laughter, right? There is the genuine laugh out loud funny, which is Louis C.K. Louis C.K. makes me die with laughter.
Yeah.
I think he's so smart and funny. But then there was like that, dark laughter where you're just laughing at the stupidity of things.
Yes.
Yep. You know, the stupidity of our politicians makes me laugh. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? That kind of weird kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a cope laughter.
Uh-huh.
Cause
otherwise you'd cry.
Yeah. Cause you would cry. But if you want about just like entertainment laughter, Louis C.K. all day, every day. I just put up YouTube. I put on mixes of his like funniest sketches. I remember the one he tells the most simple things in such a funny way. He tells this story. Anyone listening should go and dig this out. We rents a car and he returns it to the airport and he doesn't have time to get to the rental place, so he just leaves it outside the airport. Mm-hmm. And they said, they phone him up and he said, yeah, I've just left it outside the airport. And they said, oh, well, you can't do that. He's like, well, I have. But the way he tells it is so funny. If I tell you that story, it's not funny. No one's laughing. He just has a delivery mechanism to make that hilarious. So I love Louis C.K. I don't think we get funny films anymore.
Not since about 2012. Tropic Thunder.
I remember when I was a kid, like a youngster, we got a Road Trip and American Pie, and it was the right kind of stupid humor for my age because I was a similar age. And we went through that period of like, This Is 40 and The Accident, the 40-Year-Old Virgin, and like, that stuff was funny. And I can't remember a film that's made me laugh recently. It's just like comedy isn't funny anymore. But I like stand up. My kids make me laugh. They're so fucking mean to me. Honestly, they're so fucking mean to me.
Coming at the king.
Yeah.
Man, I really appreciate you. Thank you so much. I've taken a lot of your time.
I don't like doing interviews.
Very valuable, man. This is awesome.
I don't think I've had any insights. I'm not I don't like being interviewed, but I appreciate
this is
it.
Fun. This is fun.
I'm glad I made a new friend on this trip.
Yeah, me too. Like this is really cool. This is what I was looking for when I came here. Was I'm a dumb guy. I'm gonna go hang out and just some smart people are gonna walk by. Eventually, I'm going to say hi to him.
I made a career out of being that guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you said.
Like, dumb guy with a mic.
Yeah. What's
before I let you go, what's one question I didn't ask you? What's one thing that you're thinking about that we didn't talk about that's important?
I'm thinking about the 101 questions to ask before you get engaged.
Yeah.
That might have stopped me getting divorced.
101. I just started reading it. I'm single. I've never been married. No kids. And
dude,
I come
from
a big family.
Don't wait too long.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing is I was always playing music full time. I was working full time. And so I had this talk about like the superhero thing. Like I had an alter ego. Like I was the guy that showed up at the bank and then I went and got on a tour bus and I never had time to wash my underwear or mow my lawn. And then everybody else starts having kids and I look around and all my guy friends, they're like getting married, kids. Amazing. And it just changed them all for the better.
Yeah. I mean, it does. My date advice to people these days is do not use the apps. The problem with the apps is like having been in love, love is never a physical thing. It to me, it was a connection when you finally connect. And it can happen to some people very quickly. Some people takes time, but it's purely a connection. And also with the apps, you get so much more from just seeing someone in a cafe and going to talk to them. My girlfriend I met at the football club, she came in and I asked her out. And so fuck the apps and don't look for what you think perfection is. Just find someone who makes you laugh and spend time with that person and get to know them. But you're gonna do the children the other end. I'm about finished my shift.
Yeah. So you got them young.
I got to be the young, unwise dad. You get to be the older, wise dad. So I ran around a bit more with them.
Yeah.
And you'll get to layer wisdom onto them for years. But don't wait too long.
I went home. My dad got cancer, and I went home to kind of help out there. And during that time, when your parents start to go downhill, you stop looking at them as the infallible parent. You start seeing the child that they are that just is in an older body.
Yeah.
And it made me appreciate so much what a good father he was. Like, just, we didn't have a whole lot, all that stuff, but I never wanted for anything. Nobody beat my ass. Like, I mean, there's a lot of good. And just thinking about that and being like, man, to be able to share that with somebody, because I know that seeing you and Connor around here, it's like, it appears this guy is your best friend.
Yeah, kind of. Although you've got to be careful about being...
You got to maintain that.
You got to maintain that thing. Less so now. He's like 21.
Right.
But you know, when people are like, they're 10-year-old, that's my best friend. I'm like, what the fuck are you on about? That's a child. That's not your best friend.
If anybody else said that, like, this 10-year-old boy is my best friend, you'd be like, arrest that man.
Yeah, but like, if even, you know, you just hear people say, it's like my best friend. That's not your best friend. It's your child.
Yeah.
You don't treat him like a best friend. You treat him like a child, which basically means you have to be... Do things that they think are mean that are right for them. Like my daughter messaged me the other day. She wants to go to London to a concert with her friends. I'm like, absolutely fucking not. You're 15. You can go with me. I'll drive you. I'll wait outside. I'll pick you up. I'll take you home. London's a dangerous fucking place. It's not happening. Oh, you're so mean. So I don't give a fucking shit. These are the rules. Once they become an adult and they pay their way, and he pays his way, he pays rent. Mm-hmm. He buys me a beer occasionally. He pays for dinner sometimes. We can be friends now. And we can have that. But I'm still a dad. I still got to put guidance onto him and help him make better decisions. Honestly, it's the most beautiful thing working with your son. It's great. It's awesome. I recommend anyone do it. It's cool. I love it.
It's a hell of a transition. The 15-year-old skateboard rocker.
Now I mean, he's got I look much different?
Yeah,
I'm just fatter and grayer. I would still skateboard if I could.
Peter, thank you so much. Tell everybody where to find you. Anything you want to tell them?
Yeah, find me. My show's called the Pete McCormack Show. It's very UK centric. Go check that out. And I own a football club called Rail Bedford. Go check that out. Buy some merch. And let's go and get rid of this belly. Thanks, Lucas.
Dude, absolute
clip or magnet, whatever you like.
I'll just get to that. Where do you want to do it? On the balcony?
Yeah, on the balcony, if that's all right.
Do you mind if I take a photo? I want to show myself.
Hell yeah, of course.
This view alone makes me want to come and stay here again a little bit more.
Well, I'll be honest. I hate the weather, but I like the view. I grew
because,
up...
Because it's too humid?
It's too fucking humid. And I grew up in Kansas. Kansas is a semi-arid desert. And so it's like 12% humidity there. and it's like 80% here.
How often does it rain?
Not enough. About every, during the rainy season, about every, I'd say three out of every
Do we four. Need to sit next to each other for this to wait?
Actually. Yeah. Are you okay with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, of course.
I didn't have anything better. I want to flip this. Can I flip it? Yeah. Yeah, and then we'll just back this up. Actually, I think that'll work really well.
If you twist it a little bit, then it doesn't look like we're holding hands. The 5 a.m. club.
Yeah.
Is that the people who start their day at 5 a.m.?
Yeah.
See, I used to do shit like that, but my problem, I get tired. How old are you?
41.
Yeah, I'm 46. In the last few years, I've started to feel the tiredness.
Yeah, I started to feel it in the last two.
Yeah.
And I got my T levels checked, and they were way off the, they were way too fucking low.
See, somebody else told me to get those checked.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that was the big thing. And so that's what started me down this kind of path of like, all the stuff I teach in man camp, which is like, get your ass out of bed, go move, get sunlight, get fresh air, get that early morning sun frequency that's going to trigger the melatonin release later on. It's going to be the thing that helps you fall asleep. So yeah, it's, once you get out of that though, it's hard to get back in.
Mm.
I think we're, yeah, we're live.
Let's go.
All right. Yeah, I wrote down like five questions to try and kind of lead into. I assume you're okay taking them off the cuff.
Whatever, man. Okay. We'll do whatever you want.
I better
what a view. I think this is one of the coolest places I've ever done a podcast.
Even better is that it's always in shade during the day. So it's perfect, right? Yeah, so you come back. You come be my neighbor.
Your listeners, your viewers can't see what we can see, but we're looking out a balcony. We can see a beautiful beach, lovely turquoise water. Yeah, why do I live in Bedford?
Yeah, that's what you need.
Why do I live in a high-tax socialist state?
Yeah.
All right, let's